Yeah, hello and welcome. I'm joined by Stelios and Harry.
Hello.
To gay
or not to gay? That's the question.
Tough one. But today we are going to be gay because we're going to... No, we're not.
Speak for yourself.
We're talking about what is the point in being gay. This has to be a joke that Harry is gay. And Roasty Redemption Mafia, which is not gay. Alrighty.
Or is it? Well, Stelios is wearing a rather gay blazer, so...
It's not gay.
It's pretty pink.
No, it's Mediterranean.
But that same
thing. It's more stylish.
Same thing.
You have the most gay fans, so that makes you the gay.
That's true, actually.
All right, not even contesting. Let's get into the news then, because we have no announcements to make. Right, I wanted to talk about what the point in anything ever is, especially if you work in media. Like, why do you bother?
Like us.
Why not just
That's
go
a
home?
Question I ask myself every now and then.
I ask it every day. Seriously. Like, genuinely, if you're not asking that question, you're probably not doing it right, to be honest.
For anyone who's wondering, 80% of Callum's workday is spent at his desk with his head in his hands. It's remarkable he gets anything done at all.
I'm a mad depressive. But I'm not the only one. NPR over here are having a depressive time. And you may remember this story that we're going to go through begins with this, in which NPR came out and said, we're quitting Twitter. Nobody cared. Because why would you? Yeah. They said this is because they were labeled state-affiliated media by Elon Musk. Because they get state funding.
Yeah.
So that's what the foreign governments were being treated as. If you got state funding or if you were controlled by a foreign state, you would get state-affiliated media under your company title there.
It also matters what you're saying. If you constantly say some things that are in favor of particular governments with a particular agenda, then you merit such a characterization.
So they got it. And they were pretty pissed. And this is where they took their hissy fit. And as you can see, they write out, we will no longer post on the 52 official Twitter feeds. Again, no one gave a crap. But they say here that the reason they're angry is because it's wrong to say they're state-affiliated media because they are a private non-profit company with editorial independence. And it receives less than 1% of its $300 million annual budget from federally funded sources. So they're saying they only get $3 million. Yeah. From the Fed. But in which case, if you're them, surely the correct move would have been, you know what, good point. We'll get rid of that 1% of funding, and then we don't have to even have this conversation ever again.
They take it, but they give it back.
If it's less than 1%, so that takes them from $300 million per year to at least $297 million. Yeah. Maybe cut off a few of those Twitter feeds, and then you don't have to say that you're government-funded anymore.
The thing is, if that was you and it's only that 1%, you'd just cut it off, deal with it, move forward. And then you'd never have to deal with this stupid conversation about, oh, you're controlled by the Fed. But they didn't do that for some reason. Probably because they're lying. Wikipedia lists it as more than 11% of their funding comes from federal sources.
Oh.
It's just that it goes through weird sources. Like, it goes to different radio stations, and then those radio stations pay NPR for the privilege of being a radio station. And then there's also universities that give NPR money, even though the Fed gave that university the money, which... Okay, it's just right. So through this hissy fit, but it's an odd comeback to say that, well, we're just leaving because it didn't work. Here's the traffic. So this is people on who support Elon Musk, of course, are kind of gloating about all this. So the last 3 months here, they lost 10 million visits to their website. So that's pretty bad. But then the detailed breakdown is even worse. As you can see here, desktop and mobile, it fell off a cliff. I mean, going from 45 million on mobile to 11 million is bad. Bad news for NPR, but for everyone else, net positive in life standards, if nothing else.
And that's in the last 2 years, I see. Most of it is in the last 2 years.
If anything, it looks as though being taken off of Twitter caused a short spike on their web traffic, probably because people were going to say, oh, what's NPR saying about this? And then they went, oh, I don't care, actually.
They didn't stay around, which if you made good content, wouldn't be the case. They'd come back. They'd be excited. Instead, they read it and went, bugger this. And it turns out we now know why, because as you can see here, this story caught my eye this morning. NPR editor says the network turned a blind eye to the Hunter Biden laptop story because it could help Trump. And this comes from this. This is a big-ass essay, which is, Jesus Christ, I'm not reading the whole thing out loud, of course. It's him saying, I've been at NPR for 25 years. Here's how we lost America's trust. And he gives a very good breakdown, frankly. I know we've all had the suspicion that the reason the media's become what it is because they decided they would go full partisan after Trump. And he's just come out and given us, yeah, here's the inside workings. That's what happened. We just went mad as an organization.
Oh, thanks for confirming everybody's suspicions.
Yeah. He says here, back in 2011, the NPR audience tilted a little bit to the left, but still bore resemblance of America at large. 26% of the listeners describe themselves as conservatives, 23% middle, and 37% liberal. That's actually pretty good. Like, if you're a left-leaning outlet, that's something you want, because you can then reach some of the other side, right? Makes good business sense, nothing else. They say here, in 2023, that picture was completely different. Only 11% described themselves as very or somewhat conservative, 21% was the middle, and 67% of the listeners were somewhat or very liberal. So they weren't just losing conservatives, they lost the moderates as well.
Yeah.
Just gone. So what happened?
That's also how it happened in universities, and it keeps happening.
Yeah. It's nice to have a good concrete example, though, to point to people, because you have this feeling that this is true because you've lived through it.
Yeah, but
various headlines.
People like numbers. So if you can give them these numbers, that's a good argument.
But also the insider situation. So he says here, among many unfortunate things, with the rise of Donald Trump, as in many newsrooms, his election in 2016 was greeted at NPR with a mixture of disbelief, anger, despair, and he's just talking about how they were all crying. And then what began as a tough, straightforward coverage of the belligerent, truth-impaired president veered into damage and efforts to topple Donald Trump. Now, of course, this guy is still a liberal. He's just like center-left, so that's why he's wording it this way. But yeah, Trump derangement syndrome destroyed the whole thing. And I wanted to
efforts to topple Trump, I wouldn't say that's particularly neutral wording that he gave there. No, that's just saying, yeah, we were actively working against him. As we can assume, most of the institutions and most of the system was, which is quite telling.
I think it's
tells us what we already knew, but it's nice to hear it straight from the horse's mouth.
Because we lived through it. You know, we paid attention the whole way through. But it's nice to sit down and actually appreciate from the inside. So, I mean, this will be happening, you may remember, at the FBI. This happened,
mm-hmm.
James Comey. This happened with basically every American institution that, because Donald Trump won, they all threw a hissy fit and tried to destroy him.
It's still going on.
Yeah, by destroying everything that made them good.
How many lawsuits is he going through at the moment? 91, something stupid.
Hmm. So they say here, we're going to go through the history because it's the specifics that matter. So it started out with the Trump-Russia collusion, in which this became catnip to the reporters. At NPR, we hitched our wagon to Representative Adam Schiff. I forget how to actually say his name. And they say that they interviewed him 25 times about Trump-Russia collusion, in which they just took him at face value, and he kept saying there was evidence of collusion. And then the Mueller report came out showing there was no evidence of collusion. To which they responded by saying nothing. NPR didn't say, whoopsie-daisy, you know, you followed the lead, it didn't work out. Just nothing. Just didn't want to talk about it ever again.
Leftist conspiracy theory confirmed, we can say that.
Yeah.
Actual nutter conspiracy theorists, wishful thinking. They still use the Russian collusion. They still use the Russian psyop argument sometimes when things in politics don't go their way or when particularly messages are being spread across social media.
Like, this is the Blue Anon meme, but in real time. Like, why did this happen? And he's like, well, the people in the reporting position were all mental liberals, so they just jumped on this. Continues. In October 2020, the New York Post published the explosive report about the laptop of Hunter Biden, in which it turned up in the Delaware computer shop and now had a bunch of stuff showing that Joe Biden himself was massively corrupt. Here's all the corruption deals. And also, Hunter Biden has a lot of cock pics, which people enjoyed on the right.
Well, Josh did.
Josh did not. But NPR, at the editing department, decided that they weren't even going to talk about the story. Quote, "We didn't want to waste our time on stories that are not really stories, and we don't want to waste our listeners' and readers' time on stories that are pure distractions." They didn't even want to follow the lead.
Yeah.
And we remember this, but I mean, just think about that for a minute. A complete abandonment of curiosity. Maybe just curiosity. Okay, well, what's happened here? You know, because if it's fake and a conspiracy theory, you get to laugh about how Giuliani has made up this nonsense. But instead, they're just, no interest.
Nobody at NPR even wondering how big it is.
No. You know, 6, 7, who knows? But they just ran pure defense for the candidate. Because, of course, Joe Biden, as now, as then, was a nothing. He had. Do you remember what Joe Biden ran on in 2020?
I am a Democratic candidate. I will do what Democratic candidates do.
It's also
black woman. Wow. That was Biden, really, wasn't it?
She's a bit black. If you look closely.
Was it Joe Biden's campaign that had the ticks with Kamala Harris?
Yeah, that was the BBC that did that.
Yeah.
So they continue. Politics also intruded into the COVID coverage, most notably on the reporting of The Source. So they go on to say that the lab leak theory immediately got rough treatment, dismissed as a racist right-wing conspiracy theory, in which Fauci and everyone else in the establishment said that this was untrue. And the guys at NPR just agreed. They didn't check anything. They didn't think, is this true? They didn't have any curiosity. They didn't go and speak to the other side to find out what they thought. Instead, they just decided, nope, not going to listen.
I mean, if your whole job is to do propaganda, you don't care if it's true or not.
Hmm.
So if they decided that it was a moment of emergency, as they constantly say, every day is a threat to American democracy, and they have to somehow intervene and step up their game, that's what was going to happen. They don't care about whether it's true or not, whether it's helpful or not.
Propaganda, I don't think, is about the message. It could be either way. It's about not making you think, fundamentally.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what this is. It's a
thought termination. I love this next bit coming up now as well, about team natural origin.
So they say here, when a colleague on our science desk was asked as to why they were so dismissive of the lab leak theory, the response was odd. The colleague compared it to the Bush administration's unfounded argument that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, meaning apparently we wouldn't get fooled again, which...
So, no confirmation. We can just assume it's not true because, well, other things in the past have been not true.
Non-thinking. And then Team Natural Origin declared that the lab leak theory had been debunked by scientists, which it hadn't.
And there you go. If you need any example right there is a perfect example of the media just literally this guy saying, yeah, we lied.
Yeah, my colleagues all around me were just lying. Why? Because they're rabid ideologues for not even anything impressive. For Mao, is at least kind of cool. It's mental. But, you know, for Joe Biden, I just... They go on. So George Floyd, they also got wrong. So the CEO sent out a message to the company at the time, saying, when it comes to identifying and ending systemic racism, he wrote that in a company-wide article, we can be agents of change. Listening and deep reflection are necessary, but not enough. They must be followed by constructive and meaningful steps forward. I will hold myself accountable for this. He said that everyone at NPR was part of the problem. In confessional language, he said that we were leaders of public media. Starting with me, we must be aware of how ourselves have benefited from white privilege in our careers. Resign. We must understand that the unconscious bias we bring to our work and actions, we must commit ourselves, body and soul, amen, to profound change in ourselves and in the institutions.
Resign.
You know what? You know what? And this is a discussion I've been having with many people. I think that you mentioned that they are ideologues. I don't know if they are. Honestly, I think that most of them are just completely amoral actors. They just think that this is their side. That's how they're going to get ahead. And it's very indicative that they don't say we're agents of progress. They say we're agents of change.
You may be a party apparatchik instead.
Yeah. So, you know, that's a hunch I have. I think
honestly,
people in key positions of power who use the DI, they don't believe in it. I think they just find it a very useful tool to hurt their enemies.
Honestly, to me, this sounds almost like a prayer, because there is that
religious
fervor aspect to it. Because I can assume that this guy, if you to put it in that framework, is like the false priest. He preaches without actually believing in it. But you know that there are insane people underneath him who go, yes, I must meditate on the edge of a mountain going, I'm racist. Ooh, I'm racist. Ooh.
Do it again.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, I'll tell you what they did, because, yeah, just wording is wording. He says that journalists were now required to ask everyone they interviewed their race, gender, and ethnicity, amongst other questions, and it had to enter it into a centralized tracking system. We were given unconscious bias training sessions, a growing DEI staff offered regular meetings imploring us to start talking about race. Monthly dialogues were offered for women of color, men of color, non-binary people were also included, of course. Most visible was the burgeoning number of employee resource or affinity groups based on identity. This included, now this is going to have to give Yukmagamur a run for its try, the Mikukpok, the Marginalized Genders and Intersex People of Color Membership Program.
Oh my God. Miggy Pop.
Yep.
Pok.
Mikukpok. Migenti, Latinx employees of NPR. NPR Noir.
That's NPR gone wrong. Sexual gone noir.
That's the black employees, NPR. Oh my God. Southwestern Asian and North Africans at NPR. Don't know how, what those, what? You know what, who's got much in common? The Pakistanis and the Indians. They love each other. Put them in the same room. There's also Ummah, which is just Muslims. Okay.
Yeah. Also, yeah, the Southwest Asians and North Africans. Let's just lump all of them together. Why don't we?
Arabs and Indians, best friends.
Do you know who's got so much in common? The Indians and the Moroccans.
Yeah.
Peas in a pod.
There's the Women, Gender Expansive and Transgender People in Technology Throughout Public Media Initiative. I don't think they came up with an acronym for that. What would they even be? Anyway. There's KIDFI, which is the Jewish Heritage Culture NPR, and the NPR Pride, the LGBTQIA+ employees at NPR.
But weren't
those all came out of thin air.
But also NPR Pride surely is already included in MIGPOC.
Yeah.
And the...
Indeed. In a document called NPR Transgender Coverage Guidance, disseminated by the news management, they were all told to avoid the term biological sex in future. Right. What was the effects of all of this top-down messaging?
Was it a load of wasted time and money?
How did you guess?
Oh my God.
The mindset animates bizarre stories, this guy writes, on how the Beatles and bird names are racially problematic and others are alarmingly divisive. Justify looting, which claims that fears about crime are racist, and suggesting that Asian Americans who oppose affirmative action have been manipulated by white conservatives.
Yeah.
This, you know, is the funny side of the SJW coin at first, where it's like, you know, the Beatles are racist. Okay. And then you're justifying looting. Mm-hmm. This then went on to justifying Hamas as victims of Israel and part of the Progressive Alliance when they committed October 7th. Because that's where it always ends up. What did you think decolonization looked like, I suppose? So what have we got wrong here? Well, they literally said, well, we've got wrong Trump, Russia, Hunter Biden, George Floyd, racism they got wrong.
We should have been more racist, he says.
Lab leak theory, they got that wrong. Transgenderism, and now Hamas.
So literally everything.
Every big issue since Donald Trump came to power, they're flat wrong. Not, it's debatable, it's wrong. Just demonstrably wrong. And we've got the articles to prove it. I mean, this one here, monuments and teams have changed names as America reckons with racism, birds are next. The racist birds have got to go. Actually read this, because just like, look at it, it's mad. What's their problem?
What bird? Swansane's thrush observed what's...
There are racist birds out there. Good luck finding them. I don't know what the hell they're talking about.
They poo more on blacks and browns.
There's defensive looting. This was a real thing, in which NPR were just publishing looting is pretty good, actually.
Natalie Escobar defending her brothers.
Yeah.
Was it an attempt to say that looting is against the system and stick it to the man?
This is the usual argument.
Defund the police.
Listen, if any...
So that the people are going to be more safe.
If anybody makes that argument, I just assume that you've got family members in prison for looting.
Yeah.
Clearly what's going on.
This one here, stories about crime are rife with misinformation and racism. Right.
The FBI last one, statistics, racist.
The last one here being that affirmative action divided Asian Americans and people of color, here's how. Arguing that Asian Americans are being tricked and you're not actually honorary Aryans. You're brown, like us. Which is just weird. It's what you're doing with your life, if nothing else. So I'll end this off with the most important parts about all of that, because why did it happen is a good question. We know. He says it, though. The problem was with diversity of opinion. When they checked out the people that were working for them, they'd hired 87 Democrats and 0 Republicans. When he pointed this out at the company, the response wasn't hostile, but instead they wanted to have a bunch of meetings about it, which they then did nothing with. In a follow-up email exchange, a top NPR news executive told me that she had been skewered for bringing up diversity of thought when she arrived at NPR. So she said, I want to be careful about how we discuss this publicly.
That kind of diversity was not their strength.
No, but also pointing it out was something that was fearful of the company. He then wrote to the top executive team about the coverage of Florida's Don't Say Gay bill, and why were they calling it that when the bill didn't have the word gay in it? To put the record straight, he asked them also to talk about Latinx, because well, Hispanics hate that term, so why are we using it? Throughout these exchanges, no one trashed me. That's not what NPR did. Instead, they were incredibly polite, but then changed nothing. Did nothing. And despite all of this, he says that the money and time they devoted to building up the news audience of blacks and Hispanics, the numbers barely budged. Instead, what increased was viewership from incredibly progressive extremist cities on the coast, like Portland. Right. What's the point? Like, the point in
just don't lose your mind.
If the point is journalism...
Stop being an echo chamber.
You want to go and find the truth. You're curious. You know, you follow leads. Sometimes they go nowhere, but you do all of them to find stories and the truth. And what is the point in this? What is the point of what NPR has become? Cannibalism is my answer. Because why else are any of these people involved? It'd be just to strip it of money before it dies whilst they propagate absolute shite. So there we are. That's NPR, which is now on a dying death spiral, has been for a time. But here's an insider's reveal of how that happened and what happened, which is, well, all the rightists were right about this. All the conservatives were right. The reason that so many institutions became dog shite after Donald Trump was because they went down this path. They had Trump derangement syndrome and then ruined themselves. Esther spit in the chat. I don't know. I've got no love lost. Let's move on.
All right. You know, with the Latinx thing, I've noticed on Twitter, people who are part of the right or the far right have started using that term unironically, purely because they know it annoys Hispanics.
Yeah.
I've seen that going on. So the fact
start using Latin plus as well.
So the fact that progressives do it also trying to be inclusive just amuses me. All right, so people who've been watching the show for the past few weeks will know that I've been on somewhat of an odyssey. I've been doing kind of an ongoing running series, which I didn't intend to happen, but it's basically looking at the microcosm of UK local politics and the way that the towns are all destroyed and full of foreign shops and foreign barbers. The councils don't know how to run themselves, local businesses going down, et cetera, et cetera. And this is the next step in that. And I'm going to try and avoid covering this subject quite as much in the future, because honestly, it got to the point doing this one, I have thoroughly demoralized myself. And I know that's a great hook for the rest of this segment.
But stick around.
But please, honestly, please stick around till the end, because there is something that I've included in here that I posted about on Twitter yesterday, but it didn't get that much traction. And I've not really seen anybody covering this. And it is important to know how your tax money, if you live in the UK, is being used to screw you over in even more inventive ways than you thought possible, than we've even covered in the past. So first, I'll talk a little bit about some news that came out recently. So this one is from August 2023. I know that's not recent, but it'll be relevant in a moment. So in the UK, the councils, town hall budgets, as they list here, as they say here on this BBC headline, are actively going down the drain. They can't afford anything that they're supposed to be doing. And they say black hole in town hall budgets rises to £5 billion. Now, what they say in here is that the BBC did an investigation and it's prompting fears that some will not be able to provide basic services. The average council now faces a £33 million predicted deficit by 2025 to 26, a rise of 60% from £20 million 2 years ago. At least £467 million will be stripped from adult care services, which include elderly care homes, respite centres, and public and support services for people with disabilities. This year, councils are closing leisure centres, reducing care packages, and raising fees for services like waste collection and parking in order to break even. Now, not only will those, of course, impact the quality of life of the people living in those areas where they're taking away those services, if you've got parking that's going up in price, you're disincentivizing people to park in town. This is a empirical effect that always happens. Less people will visit if it's more expensive to visit, and local businesses will be impacted, which is relevant to what I covered last time. Councillor Sean Davis, who chairs the Local Government Association, said inflation, the introduction of the national living wage, energy costs, and increasing demand for services, I wonder where those increasing demands are coming from, were adding billions of extra costs just to keep services standing still. So literally everything there is a result of government policy. National living wage, government policy. Inflation, that's been part of government policy. Energy costs, that's been government policy, putting sanctions on Russia. Increased demand for services, obviously a result of mass immigration. Clearly, this is all the fault of the government, and it's actively meaning that local government can't function properly as well. Bradford Council...
You are right to make that point, just as a moment, because I kind of get annoyed when especially some people online will think that everything that's wrong in their life needs to be solved by the state, and it's like, try not to interact with it if you can, to be honest. But when it comes to the UK, I mean, the structural problems are because of the infrastructure and the legal side, which is set up by UK Gov. And yeah, they failed on every front.
Every imaginable metric is incompetently managed. Is managed so poorly that this country is actively going down the toilet. And I'll carry on with this. Bradford Council said the authority was using reserves at an unprecedented level, while Leicester City Council said that it was going to run out during the next financial year. Several councils have called for financial support from the government, among them Slough, Croydon, Thurrock, Kensington and Chelsea. The newly created Cumberland and Westmorland and Furness councils will share around £393 million in government funding this year. So for that amount of councils, for three new councils, because I think that they changed it so they centralized some of them. So councils that were formerly made up of three distinct areas all got centralized in a local authority instead. So they're having to share those funds. Thurrock declared bankruptcy in December 2022 after a series of failed solar farm investments. Net zero. Oh, it's...
No, that was pretty funny.
It's the future, remember?
You know the details of that?
No, I don't.
It's some guy who set up solar farms like Wiltshire and then just lied and said they were generating double the energy that they were because, come on, it's in Britain, solar farms. And the stupid council just kept investing money in it with this lie. But then when it was investigated, he hadn't actually done anything wrong. So he's just living on a private jet in Dubai.
I mean, do you know how much money they ran up? It says in this article here.
Billion?
£500 million deficit. So half a billion on a single council.
Yeah, and one guy got all that.
Some guy scammed them because presumably the council is having to adhere to net zero targets. And they're going to take... They've got government money. They've got their local council tax and grants from the central government as well. So they'll just hear some guy going, oh, you know, all of your magic dreams? Well, they can be reality. And they go, oh, our dreams can be reality. And they find out the man who sold them the monorail didn't actually know how to build a monorail. And it crashed. Oh, wait, no, that's a Simpsons episode. But it might as well be true. Slough was also forced to effectively declare bankruptcy after borrowing more than £700 million to buy land and properties. Councils, it says here, funded through a mix of council tax, business rates, income from services like parking and social housing rent, as well as money from the government known as the Revenue Support Grant. Funding declined by nearly a third between 2020 and 2021, according to the Public Accounts Committee, which found council income was £8.4 billion lower in real terms than it had been a decade before. Now, real terms, of course, is also taking into account inflation and everything. But yeah, it does seem that the whatever money that the government was relying on during New Labour got cut off. And like cutting off a heroin addict from his drug supply immediately, going cold turkey, has the chance of killing him, means that the councils have just died. Despite high-profile failures, many councils have continued to take risks on commercial investments to increase their income. A Freedom of Information request by BBC found Somerset Council had bought more than £136 million worth of retail property since the start of the pandemic, including a B&Q in Ayr and a Wickes in Birmingham. That's going to generate all of that revenue that we're losing, boys, if we just get Wickes and a B&Q. Brilliant. That's how we solve our problems. And for this, you may be...
Stonks.
B&Q to the moon during the pandemic where shops are closed and people are forced to stay inside. Genius, genius business planning. I know what you're thinking.
For Americans, B&Q is a hardware shop.
As is Wickes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for this, you may be thinking, wow, those guys running your councils, they sure are smart. They sure are smart. They deserve a big payday. Well, don't you worry. They do get a big payday because there is a record surge. This has been a recent report by the Taxpayers Alliance, a record surge in the number of council fat cats, they say here, which is just the council bosses, paid more than £150,000 a year as bills for local taxpayers soar. Yeah. There were among 3,106 town hall staff whose total remuneration topped £100,000 in 2022 to 23, the most since 2015. Figures cause anger among council taxpayers because their average council tax is going up by an average of 5.1%. It says here £2,171 for a typical Band D property. So that's great. At the same time, many town halls are cutting back on their services, such as bin collections, pothole repairs, and libraries, blaming rising demand and a shortfall of cash. The highest total pay in pension packet across local government for 2022 to 23 was £651,158. Now, do you want to know how that was broken down? So it was handed out to a woman called Felicity Rowe, former Director of Culture, Communities and Business Services at Hampshire County Council, which just last year warned it faces financial meltdown. She was awarded a £120,000 salary, £121,000 compensation for loss of office, and £409,000 pension.
I think that puts her on the 0.1% of earners.
In the UK, yes.
I don't even know what to say.
And that's an enormous pension.
Yeah.
Most people, I looked it up, I think most people's average pension by the time they reach 65 in the UK is something like a pension pot of 37 grand, which puts them below the poverty line.
And that's pretty bad.
Yeah. I looked up for some other things as well, and some pension pots that will allow you to live comfortably in the UK basically have to be something like £1 million. If you want to live a comfortable lifestyle on an annual income that you can draw from your pension once you retire, if you get to retire these days. And she, for losing her job, because they did one of those things where they restructured it and made a few councils one council, so her position wasn't needed anymore, gets 121 grand and then £409,000 pension. Last night, a spokesman for the council said the total remuneration allocated to Ms. Rowe in Hampshire County Council's statement of accounts 22 to 23 details both the salary she received up until December 31st, 2022, the compensation for loss of office she received following a restructure, as well as a pension contribution that was made to the Hampshire Pension Fund and was not a payment made directly to Ms. Rowe. But that is still part of her pension.
Are you sure you're describing the UK? Because it sounds like you're describing Greece.
I don't know. It sounds like I'm describing somewhere in Central Africa, doesn't it, really? This sounds like insane corruption to me, going like giving these enormous payments to people when the councils are already running out of money.
I mean, I want to say this because, we have had several discussions about the state and the role of the state in society. And as Callum, as you said before, it's really mad sometimes to, when the people adopt the mentality that, when in doubt, just increase the state. I mean, You know, I'm no doctrinaire free market person. I'm not. But a lot of the arguments made against a very interventionist state, they hold water.
Well, yeah, because when it comes to things like this, absolutely. There's corruption and basically...
Yeah, because the main question is, what is the incentive of the government to put people who are competent? The incentive is to put people who can generate political support for you. That's how most governments think.
You'll be shocked that that's part of the argument they use for why they're paying people so much, is that we need to stay competitive on the market. We need to make sure that we're attracting the best people for the jobs, you're not.
You're offering salaries. I mean, even the MPs now are in the top 5% of earners.
Yes. Some of these people as an annual salary are earning more than the cap for the Prime Minister. And they're saying, if we...
I run Thorock Council!
If we don't give these people enormous amounts of money and enormous pension buyouts from an almost bankrupt council, we won't be able to attract the best people, who we're not attracting anyway because all of these councils are run terribly, don't respond to people's actual concerns in the local constituents, and... result in your towns looking the way that I've described in recent segments. This is just corruption from top to bottom.
If we did the Brazilian thing and elected a hippo and paid him £1 a year, I mean, we would have at least saved 100 grand.
Yeah. So I'll carry on. So the spokesperson for Hampshire County Council continues, this pension contribution recognizes that when an employee is made redundant in certain circumstances, there is an entitlement for an early release of pension. Ms. Rowe's past was deleted. Her post was deleted as part of the restructure. But of course, I think they include a picture of her. Here she is. She doesn't look like she's past retirement age to me. So, she's got 120 grand to live on for a year while she looks for another job. You can just get another job.
51 grand in a year.
Yeah.
I was going to get taxed a bugger, but still.
Still though. I mean, come on. The second highest remuneration, £586,134, went to John Metcalf, who spent only a year as chief executive of Cumbria County Council before it was abolished. He got £16,000 for loss of office on top of his £170,000 salary. That's more than the Prime Minister gets. and £399,000 pension. Again, you're just throwing out 400 grand pensions to these people. And this guy only worked a year.
Non-taxable, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you're right.
That's the reason.
Yeah, I wonder. There's more examples here, but I'll just go to the end here because I want to get to the more important stuff. So a spokesman woman for the local government association, the national representative body for councils, said councils are large, complex organizations with sizable budgets. It's important that the right people with the right skills and experience are retained to deliver this important work. Senior pay is always decided by democratically elected councillors in an open and transparent way. There you go. There's the democratically elected councillors saying, should we pay ourselves more? All in favour, say aye. Everyone puts their hand up and says aye.
I love democracy.
It's beautiful. And of course, they point out in this article, in 2023, Nottingham, Birmingham and Woking councils all faced bankruptcy. Croydon, for the third time, and Thurrock went bankrupt in 2022. Half of councils are warning of effective bankruptcy within 5 years without reform. That's half. Half of all of our councils are mismanaging money and not receiving enough money to the extent where they will go out of business potentially whilst paying themselves backhands of 400 grand at a time. And if you want access to this information, you can go to the Taxpayer Alliance website where you can find documents like this. It's very simple what they did. They just went through all of the details, because the councils publish the amount of money they're all getting. But of course, local authorities failed to file their annual statements of accounts for 2022-23 by 27th March 2024. That's 6 months late than when you're supposed to do it. 59 councils did that. And guess which ones included there? Wiltshire Hello. Council don't want you knowing how much they earn.
Well, we've got that solar farm to worry about.
Oh, yeah, of course.
The monorail will run on time.
Of course we do. So, of course, 59 councils not submitting their the amount they're being paid means that the figures that are being given here, there might be people earning even more. There might be even more blatant corruption going on. But in doing this research, I was also looking across, you know, the different ways that councils waste money, the way that there's so many. I was looking into my own old council, Cheshire East, which governs Crewe, where I'm from. I was looking into all of the different ways that they waste money, and like NPR, so many of them are just wasting so much time doing equality, diversity, inclusion stuff. They have to stick with the Equality Act, so every single decision that they make has to have an equality impact assessment to it, and it just balloons everything. There are different groups, support groups that people of different backgrounds are given constantly. Everything turns into an enormous meeting. So money being wasted, time being wasted, nothing actually being done. But I will admit as well, that there is also the fault of the central government again with this, because with the Cheshire East Council, Crewe is currently a black hole, a capital black hole in that town, because all of the businesses are closing. And part of that is to do with the fact that the whole town was restructuring itself for regeneration with HS2 coming through. And then HS2, the northern leg, gets cancelled. And I can't imagine how many northwest towns that has completely destroyed because their local councils were saying, hey, this is going to make this place more attractive.
The monorail's coming.
Yeah, the government has promised the monorail will arrive here, and then it gets cut off, and all of a sudden, oh, we destroyed all of our business, shut down all of these areas, bought up all of these properties and knocked them down, and now we've run out of money, and HS2 isn't even coming through. Fantastic. But yeah, as part of this, I came across this fresh £450 million funding round opens for council refugee housing scheme with focus on new builds. Now, let me read you a bit of this, because I couldn't believe it when I started off. And I thought, oh, this is what, some website called Housing Today? Housing Today? This can't be some random, this must be some random website. But no, this is true. I found the government webpage talking about this, but we'll get into more details. So the DLUHC, that's the Department of Leveling Up, wants half of properties delivered through the local authority housing fund round three to be new homes. So Tom Harwood has his wet dream here. He gets build more houses and infinity migrants in the same policy. Details of how councils can access a £450 million funding pot to provide homes for refugees have been published by the Department for Leveling Up Housing and Communities. guidance published yesterday, that's on the 7th of March this year, states councils have until 28th March to tell the government how they intend to use their indicative funding allocation under the scheme, while those not receiving an allocation can express their interest in using unclaimed funds. DLUHC wants councils to ensure half of the homes they provide through the scheme are new builds, as opposed to existing properties bought, in order to provide 2,400 new homes. Now, these are all for either homeless people or refugees under the Afghan resettlement scheme.
So not homeless people.
So not homeless people, because technically, if you import a load of refugees over to this country, until you give them housing, they're all technically homeless. So they just get free housing straight away that has been purpose-built for them. While we're in the middle of a housing crisis, local authorities that commit to using the funding to deliver new homes as opposed to acquiring existing homes will receive an additional 10% uplift in the grant provided. Homes England will also provide targeted support to councils with limited housing development experience and networks. So you will be getting this money so that you can take it to developers and get help from Homes England, once again, to build new homes specifically for refugees. As of the end of March last year, 8,799 Afghan refugees were living in temporary accommodation. In February last year, local government association data indicated that councils have helped 163,500 Ukrainians settle in the UK. Ukrainians, you can make more of an argument for, as we have done in the past, including 47,800 arrivals via the Ukraine Family Scheme. But this is not for those people. This is specifically, as we will find out as I go through the webpage in a moment, for Afghans. So here it is. 7th March 2024, guidance, Local Authority Housing Fund, Round 3 Prospectus and Guidance. And I'll read through some of the more important passages here. So they justify it in the introduction, saying, to date, approximately 24,600 people affected by the situation in Afghanistan have been brought to safety through UK resettlement and relocation schemes. This includes British nationals and their families, Afghans who loyally serve the UK, and others identified as particularly at risk. And listen to this.
Screw them all. I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't want any of those people.
Such as campaigners for women's rights.
Not my problem.
Human rights defenders.
Not my problem.
Chevening scholars.
Not my problem.
Journalists, judges, and LGBT people.
Not our problem.
Government is now working to ensure that Afghans who are eligible for relocation, bear in mind that that literally includes shrews and people who are criminalized for being gay in foreign countries, will just... Okay, they're eligible for relocation.
Okay, so those people in any country on earth can now come here. Is that what we're saying?
And who remain overseas in Pakistan and other third world countries, nice and vague, are moved over here so they can start to rebuild their lives here in the United Kingdom. So this is like when Labour came in, New Labour, Tony Blair's government, came in and said that they actually sent out search parties looking for migrants to come to the UK.
We need more gay Afghans. Please.
This is literally saying that if you are just a insane progressive in a third world country, you are eligible to come over here and get housing made for you.
Or if you just lie and say you are.
Yep. LAHF round 3 will also maximize the potential for local authorities to bring forward new housing in local areas, with delivery over 2 years unlocking this potential. I love that government bureaucrat speech. Unlocking this potential. Like, you just see a big field and go, what if we just put 1,000 Afghans there? Now it's unlocked its potential.
Just you picture skyscrapers suddenly getting built.
Yeah, and then becoming slums. We are aiming for 50% of all properties delivered through this to be new homes. We encourage local authorities to work with developers, convert non-residential properties, and start new developments with the funding to achieve this objective. The objectives of this are to reduce local housing pressures. That's what this will do. All those new housings that we need to build constantly, what's the target? Something like 150,000, 250,000 houses per year, which we can't meet already. And the increased population of legal people, legal migrants coming into the country being absurd, causing massive housing pressures. No, we also need to be building new homes specifically for Afghans and gay Afghans and gay Arabs to come over here who just say, oh yeah, I'm a gay Arab. I'm in danger. Let me in, please. And the government says, okay, here's your brand new 4-bedroom house. Fantastic.
And there is a whole industry of asylum granting.
Yes.
Granting licenses for asylum that they forge all these stories.
Yes. So housing delivered as part of this could include, but it's not limited to, expanding existing local authority delivery programs or those of local housing association partners, increasing the number of affordable housing units and house builder-led schemes due to be completed in 2024 to 25 or 26, bringing empty dilapidated properties, both residential and commercial units, back into use, including properties owned by a local authority or housing association. So when you hear about councils buying up loads of property, this might be what they're using it for. If you've got a building down your road that hasn't been used for anything, watch out. Your local council might have bought that so that they can renovate it into housing for foreigners. That'll be fun. Remodeling defunct specialist accommodation, including sheltered accommodation, flipping forthcoming shared ownership completions into housing, providing modular housing as part of wider efforts to use MMC to support local temporary accommodation pressures, commissioning new supply that can be delivered in the next few years from developers, or purchasing existing properties on the open market. Is this what we as a country, we as a people, think that 450 million taxpayer pounds should be used for? Especially when we see the state of our local towns and see the state of homelessness in our larger cities of English people. Is this what we should be spending our money on? Or is this an insane betrayal by people who have no care for the people that they are supposed to be governing and want to import people into your neighborhood? If you are in a town right now that is protected from this kind of encroachment into your demographics, if you are living in a town that is still mostly British, this could be used as a backdoor way to literally take the nice field that your house is adjacent to and build over it and put foreigners there.
We need it for new build homes. Trust me, these new build homes will help with the housing crisis. And then we just put Afghans in there.
Yeah. This is amazing. So the type of homes, they say, local authorities should consider the needs of the ACRS cohort when determining the size, type, and location of properties to acquire. These homes are intended to meet local and wider domestic ACRS needs and a need from future ACRS, that's the Afghan Resettling Scheme, arrivals. Local authorities will be provided with an allocation for both medium-sized family homes, 2 and 3 beds, which we expect to be the majority of demand for this cohort, as well as a smaller volume of 4-plus-bed larger family homes, here referred to as large resettlement units. Also, maybe a few one-bedroom places, but yeah. They say at the bottom here as well, we recognize that the grant will not meet all acquisition/delivery costs, and so we expect that the council or its partners will provide the remainder of the funding required. So we're not actually even giving you the right amount of money that you need to do all of this, but we still expect you to do it. So all of those councils that are already on the verge of bankruptcy can bankrupt themselves doing this. We're a failed state, honestly. Honestly, can you see why I was so demoralized finding this out? And this is already going in place. This is already happening right now. Peterborough Council is already doing this. They've bought 15 new homes for refugees by the end of March. Properties will be added to the 25 homes bought by Peterborough Council last year as part of the refugee resettlement scheme. The scheme has been funded by the Department for Levelling Up, Local Authority Housing Fund. And I checked, and the average house prices in Peterborough were around £252,000. Fantastic. Council will also use some of the money from the fund to refurbish the properties it's bought. So they get it nicely refurbished as well. And I think from that document, it's about £21,000 per refurbishment they're allocated. So that's a nice refurbishment if you know what you're doing with it. Or will the money maybe go into somebody's back pocket or be spent on cowboys? Or maybe there'll be people who have...
cowboy builders.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Or maybe some of these council members will be friends or related to some of the people expected to do the refurbishments. So it's a nice way of spreading that money again, perhaps. Some people, they need their pensions filling up, that pension pot's, oh, 300 grand, that's a bit light, don't you think? Let's pop a bit extra money in there. Honestly. The City Council said that support would be available for refugees that have been resettled in Peterborough under the national schemes, which nobody voted on, nobody asked for, nobody wanted, as the result of a war that nobody voted for, nobody asked for, nobody wanted, that we should never have been involved in. Brilliant. And just a reminder as well. Oh, also they say that, we'll also buy 25 one-bedroom homes for rough sleepers. But once again, all of these people, all of these refugees who come over here are technically homeless until we put them in homes anyway. So that doesn't matter. And just a reminder of the sorts of people that we are bringing over here. I just saw this right before we came on live. And this is from a guy who, a mutual of mine, at Aylmer, posting this Sky News documentary where they talk about how the refugee system works in the UK. And let's just play this little clip, shall we? If I take it back to the beginning here.
And if firms have the capacity and the funding to take appeals on, they will do so.
Sometimes even an appeal can be appealed, and these court documents reveal some of those cases. Westernisation is one reason successfully argued. When people have been here so long, they say they can't go back. And this is the extraordinary case of another convicted sex offender who continues to act inappropriately towards women, but was allowed to stay in Britain because committing sexual acts in public in Afghanistan would put him at high risk of physical violence from mob mentality.
Good.
And if firms have the...
There you go.
This is the few things I actually quite like about the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan.
Yep.
They know how to deal with, well, rapists and paedophiles.
But those are the people we've been importing into the country and will soon be building a new home near yours just to put them in. And remember, they're a sex offender, but if we sent them back to where they came from, they might actually be charged for it. Whereas we in the UK, we're now famous for not pressing criminal charges against sex offenders.
So where are the sex offenders going to move to?
Yeah, I wonder. So yeah, I hope you've got a more fun segment to end us out on, because honestly, keep sharp objects away from me right now.
I like your odyssey from anti-statism to anti-statism or anti-big government.
Yeah.
Right. So, the online conservatives are suffering a civil war, and civil wars are occasions where we see rampant division around us. So I want to spread the message of unity, because in times of war, we need to be together and we shouldn't fight each other. And the conservatives right now are facing a civil war. I'm not talking about Ben Shapiro and Candace Owens. I'm talking about the question, do you believe in life after OnlyFans? Because I can feel something inside me say, I really don't think it's strong enough. Let's see what's going on. So is Nala Ray, we can see her here, the undisputed Ahego queen. Is she redeemed or not? Well, I shouldn't explain myself, Harry.
Oh, okay. I should just know.
Yeah. Okay. So you can see her here on the Whatever podcast. We cannot play what she says. But you can see all the faces of the people around. This was just a very weird episode. Anyway, so
whatever podcast
Nala Ray, also known as Fitness Nala, is claiming to have found God after she has made a fortune of $9 million from OnlyFans.
$9 million.
Yeah, that's what she says, and she has appeared in the Daily Wire and the Michael Knowles show, and let's see what happened. So right now she tries to rebrand herself and say, for instance, that she's a changed woman. And there's a big divide in conservatives. I will tell you more about the main belligerents in a bit, but look at what she says here.
The ones who are glamorizing it are men trying to run women's lives and take a percentage out of it. And it's horrifying. It's truly horrifying to be like a woman and have men take a percentage of you showing your body on the internet. It's just like having a pimp. That's exactly what it's like. It's like an online
okay,
pimp.
Up.
So it's truly horrific that it's being advertised in that manner. But it makes me want to fight all the more to help.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a point you could make there about somebody like Andrew Tate and the Tate brothers who did that kind of thing with women in Romania or wherever.
Yeah.
Well. But that just sounds to me like just completely shifting all responsibility.
We'll talk about it because, you know,
have women discovered accountability yet?
No,
still no.
Also,
I mean, so, just what you have on screen. A man did this to me.
I hate,
look what men have done.
I hate to say it. I know women who have done this sort of stuff, right? And it's never been men picking up. Most of the time, from what I've seen, and I have been that guy, there have been men in their lives saying, don't do that. You're going to regret this.
I think when...
And I don't know if any of them have had men picking it up to them. It's always been other women.
I think she did that to herself. So she's talking about the audience. and we'll say a bit about this, but here, general middle MAGA, you'll see, says 15 days after the Daily Wire allegedly fired Candace Owens for her Christ is King comment, they platformed Nala Ray. So the discussion here is about Nala Ray, whether her claim to have found Jesus are true or no, is true or not. Right. So I want to say something now. The main belligerents are the pro-redeemers and the no-redeemers. The pro-redeemers are led by Michael Knowles, Lauren Chen, Morgan Ariel, and Jordan Cooper. And the no-redeemers are led by the Cringeloid Commander PIMP, Laura Luma, Ian Miles Chong, and Middle MAGA. And the main motto is, you can get some women out of OnlyFans, but you can't get the OnlyFans out of them. That's the main motto of the no-redeemer side. I don't know if it's too harsh. Does it sound harsh or not?
That does sound quite harsh. I'm sure that there are women who have left OnlyFans who are sincere in the fact that they regret it. The question is whether she is, or if she is one of a few women who are suspected of basically just rebranding themselves for a different audience now that they've made all the money that they need.
Exactly, my friend. So here we have this argument by the Daily Wire by Virginia Kruter. Says OnlyFans model quits platform after making millions. Says she found God. Now, Ray sat down for a wide-ranging interview with Knowles, who dug into her own past as the daughter of a pastor and how she allegedly got into pornography and what finally made her decide to let it all go. I won't say something about the interview. I'll show you some clips. But what is really funny, I must say this, what's really funny is that Michael Knowles is being very philosophical. He's talking about, you know, he's throwing quotes from St. Thomas Aquinas and stuff like that. And he's talking to her. It's just so surreal. See, here, the move into pornography, she explained, came as the result of an innate fascination with the human body and its beauty. So you can see there's a strong sense of the Renaissance spirit. Now, Leonardo da Vinci, who was painting the Vitruvian Man, he was interested in depicting the human form in its perfection. So if Leonardo da Vinci was living in our times, I don't know if he would have an OnlyFans account or not.
In another era, she'd have been a Greek sculptor. She was just so interested in the form.
If we didn't have the internet, you'd be the whore at McDonald's. I'm sorry. You just...
Well,
I hate this.
Nala said that what ultimately brought her to Christ was the fact that she felt numb and that she believed there had to be something more. It was difficult for me to feel things like sadness. I felt like I had never cried. So basically, she was feeling that with all the money she made from the from OnlyFans, she was in a position when she could feel nothing.
Okay, that's a fair statement.
Yeah, is it?
Yes, I can imagine that once you've sold yourself out to millions, well, potentially millions or thousands of people in such a public manner and basically debased yourself, I can imagine that that affects your emotions. I also, once again, from my own experience, knowing people like this, they tend to already be coming from an emotionally damaged position in the first place.
Well, you'll see also that she was fascinated with nudity and stuff. So I'm sure you're right. Yeah,
like an excuse.
Well, anyway.
Trying to rationalize it to yourself.
But here, she says something really interesting that I want to see what you are going to say about it. She went on to say that she wouldn't take anything back. Although she admitted she felt shame for the things she did while on the pornography platform, because it was what had shaped her and brought her to where she is today. And that, she said, might help her to reach young people who were thinking about joining the platform. So, that's the issue here. The question is she lying or not? Right. So I want to show you some clips from this interview.
That one comment. Sorry.
That hair is still as red as the devil's little Richard. Yeah. So let's look at the first
I was a minute. Pastor's kid. It started slow. I started OnlyFans. I made like $85,000 the first month.
What was it about you that was able to make $1 million a year?
My biggest thing that I sold was that I'm multiple girls.
Jesus Christ.
Put all of that energy into creating Nala.
How much money do you have at this point?
$9 million. My parents kind of disowned me.
That sounds catastrophic.
Sorry.
I've never really dove into that feeling. Yeah. Never talked about this. What's the point of all this money when I don't have feelings?
Is that the moment where you say, all right, I got to start getting out of this thing?
I saw.
So does she convince you?
Not even fucking slightly. I'm sorry. That's the whole bullshit about I was interested in art or whatever. Yeah. Hey, you give any 20-year-old $85,000 for a month, the first month of doing whatever it is, doesn't matter if it's pornography, they'll do that thing. They'll do that goddamn thing because you just made so much money. That's the motive.
My question is, why did she, some random pastor's daughter that nobody has ever heard of, make $85,000? Because no offense, she's quite plain.
Most OnlyFans people make zero.
Yeah, exactly. Most of them make less than $100 a month off of what they're doing. And that's something like 95% of them. How is it that she, of all random people, immediately comes on the platform, immediately makes $85,000 when she doesn't look any different from any of the other girls that you see on these platforms?
She has said it is that she made that face.
Advertising.
Yeah. She made the face I showed you before.
A single face and all of a sudden you get $85,000? That sounds strange.
And she wants to brand herself as the prodigal daughter.
Can I just pause it?
Of course.
The other things that are strange with this is, okay, you've come out and you've said you've got your new redemptive arc, and I honestly hope that it's true, but if you've got the redemptive arc, I've seen other people talking about this. It's strange that if you think that the money was gotten sinfully, that you don't do something good with it instead. Maybe she will. I hope that she will. And then you immediately go on a press tour.
Well, you might do, yeah, or you might be Hassan Piker. And you don't really care because
there's a lot about this that doesn't add up. Like the incentives that I'm seeing presented here is not to young women. Don't do OnlyFans. It's do OnlyFans until you've made your millions and then repent and then get conservative media tours.
Well,
that's, I don't mean to be cynical, but that's what I'm seeing here.
I want to show you also another clip that's a bit surreal with Michael Knowles trying to be very philosophic.
One of the underappreciated aspects of temptation is that it's very tempting.
Right, that's it. He's a Platonist about universals. Okay?
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I don't have to explain it right now. It's a very intractable thing. But, you know,
I just need to feel it, Callum.
I'm just saying, I'm an Aristotelian. He seems to be a Platonist. I think misery itself isn't miserable. So temptation itself isn't tempting. But that's another debate.
That seems like a contradiction, what you've just said there, but all right.
Well,
is this advertising, is my question? Because that's how you make this money doing this. In fact, I believe the Whatever podcast stopped having OnlyFans girls on because of her.
Well, because women like her were using the platform as a means to advertise their OnlyFans.
I mean specifically her. She came on, advertised like all the rest, but was also a bit of a cunt. So then they just went, right, no, we're not having those girls on anymore.
Question now. How do you think she changed? Someone fixed her. And I'm saying this because I'm also making this statement because there are some people who really are into the fixing thing. I want to say that, you know, just take that with a pinch of salt. Let's look at what she says here, how she was saved.
You're going to have to refresh it there.
Yep.
John's got that.
Yep. Okay. We'll find it. Yeah.
A creative to
even though popularly people Easter Sunday.
This was Easter.
Is that the first good thing that's ever come out of TikTok?
Absolutely.
Might be the only.
A million percent. But it started as such an amazing friendship. And he lived in Virginia. I lived in California. We didn't like touch or meet for months. Hmm. We only spoke on FaceTime almost every single day, all day long. Like we got to know each other without any physical touch, which is like my love language. So that was crazy.
Oh,
for
right,
me.
Right.
Right.
But how does one meet on TikTok?
Okay, this was crazy. So he does like live battling on TikTok. And I was just swiping one night and he's prior Air Force. And he had this like battle helmet on and like a bulletproof like vest on.
Anyway, so you see,
it feels very curated. Story.
Okay, so this is what the middle MAGA says, that she is very polished. Even for politician level, she's unbelievably polished. her reactions, the way she does it. So, for instance, in the beginning, when she says, "What's the manual?" Well, you don't have feelings. The way she speaks, it just seems a bit fake to some people. Anyway, let's go to the belligerence now. The first attack came from Laura Loomer, who attacks Michael Knowles for not defending Donald Trump enough. I must say, I find this a sort of weird attack. She says, why does Michael Knowles and his simp fan accounts fight harder for porn stars than they fight for Donald Trump? Truly depraved behavior from conservative ink that does nothing to help Trump get reelected.
As a Catholic, they're more concerned with redeeming these women than they are with that.
Anyway, Michael Knowles responds, in case community knows misses this, I defend President Trump on my show virtually every day and addressed a fundraiser at Mar-a-Lago 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, that's a kind of fair response. I don't watch Michael Knowles, so if he does that, you know.
True, but my point I was saying was that it's saving souls rather than just minor politics.
Yeah. Lauren Chen comes on the counter-offensive, who I must say I really adore and respect her. She says, we're all in need of Christ's forgiveness and redemption. Not one of us would be found worthy if we were judged by our own merits. I pray Nala is being genuine here, because if she is, we're truly witnessing the indescribable power of grace and the Holy Spirit. That's counter-offensive. What do you think of this?
I don't find this person interesting at the time. I don't find them interesting now. I don't like them. It's about my opinion.
Yeah, I think Lauren's sentiments respectable and true, but once again, what I'm being presented here, because I'd not really looked into this before, what I'm being presented is not painting a picture of an entirely sincere. This has all of the marks to me of a big media campaign. And again, the incentives for young women are not don't do OnlyFans, it'll damage you. It's do OnlyFans until you've got your money and then get your media tour.
Right. General Chong launches a double offensive.
Isn't this that meme though? Like, it's all those memes about like when you're 20, blah, 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 blah. And then, oh, now I'm ready to settle down. Okay.
So, Ian Miles Chong, what a coincidence that the former OnlyFans star is dropping a new clothing line just a week after her supposed conversion to Christianity. I'm sure she's completely genuine and not about her continuing to grift.
Who cares about her clothing line as well? Like, all the things that...
He shows this here that... No, the question would be whether she is changing her brand in order to sell...
That's what I'm getting at.
Clothes to Christian.
Like, what authentic person who's having a midlife crisis and changing their ways is like, ooh, my clothing line.
Because you don't make a clothing line overnight. There's a lot of work goes into it. Management teams, PR teams go into these as well. That's why I'm saying this feels very stage managed.
Yeah. And he continues, completely sociopathic. Would you believe that she's now being heavily promoted and touted as the next major tradition? No Christian conservative influencer, as if there's a shortage of good conservative women. That's another thing. Now, to be fair, I don't think she is presented necessarily as the next conservative icon.
I don't like her.
Look at what she does.
Taking the North Harry, FC line
Harry, look.
Do I have to?
Yeah. Of course you have to.
I just don't think she's a good person. Don't want to know her. That's about as far as it goes.
Yeah. So here, Dr. Jordan B. Cooper says, I heard about this Jewish teacher named Paul who used to persecute Christians, even want them killed. Would you believe that he's being heavily promoted and touted as the next major Christian theologian, as if there's a shortage of good Christian men? I don't know exactly how this helps, because
it's just annoying to listen to.
The whole thing should be about how she isn't portrayed to be as an icon. I don't know. Here, for Nikari Delendisund, this is a very weird name, says in response, Paul spent 2 years off somewhere out of the spotlight before starting his ministry. This girl is still trading off the fame of her porn career. She may be sincere, but turning her into a trad icon a month after she quit porn is not healthy.
Yeah, because to be honest, like, I saw when she first came off this, I saw somebody on Twitter share the video where she was saying, oh, I'm not doing this anymore. Guys, I've come to the light of God. And sadly, and once again, this is me being very cynical, but I turned out to be right. The first thing that came into my mind is, I wonder when the big conservative interview is going to come about. I wonder when she's going to get the big conservative platforms coming and saying, like, let's speak to you.
Do you think there's a portion of conservatives who are really thinking of how to cause a sort of cultural shift by using memes like that?
Moments like this, I'm really glad I'm not a Christian. And I hate to say it, but it's true, because seeing this, I'd be like, oh, is it the Christian thing to do, or a Christian thing not to do? And I'm just like, she's a bad person. I don't care if she's Christian. She's just a bellend.
Well,
we've spoken to in the past, say, detransitioners, and I think there's a lot of value in speaking to or having spoken to detransitioners, because of the fact that there's a certain amount of sincerity that comes with going that far with something and then turning it back and saying this was a bad decision to make, because you're not exactly, unless you are some kind of big social media influencer, somebody like Richie that we spoke to, he was not making money.
Not bellend.
Off being trans. Exactly. Yeah.
It's just simple things.
It's a lot easier to take that as sincere than when somebody has made $9 million and then immediately goes on the conservative media press tour.
Well, I want to say here, I think this response is deeply mistaken. It's by Samantha D. She says, I'm no better than this woman, neither are you. So I want to say, you know, I'm not a prude. Okay. You know me. Okay, I'm not a Puritan. I never come and tell people how moral I am or something. And I'm not going to do it now. But I want to say that this kind of sentiment is sort of like a socialist leveling down sentiment. So it's just in the moral sphere, not just in the sphere of material resources. When, you know, people are saying, you know, that the egalitarians, when it comes to wealth, they try to level everyone down because they hate inequalities. I think that this is the same in the moral level. Why should you say to people that they aren't necessarily better than someone who had this career so far and only just said to have found God right now? But also, I mean, as if the whole path doesn't matter, someone just says, I found God. And you don't inquire whether they actually work the path of virtue.
But it's also that the conversation is about whether or not they're a good Christian or a good conservative or blah, 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 blah. I feel like a good person's just more important.
Yeah.
Especially in these circumstances. I kind of hate that I'm seeing people argue about whether or not this is Christian or not.
Yeah.
So this is not the conversation to have. The more interesting conversation is this a good person?
And Morgan Ariel says here, Satan is the great accuser. Why post all of her old content when the scripture says that we are new creations in Christ? So she accuses people who accuse her of being that every accuser is driven by Satan. Just to show that, you know, sometimes...
Okay, would we be having this conversation if she converted to Islam? Because when you convert to Islam, all of your previous sins are forgiven as well. Would anyone have the same opinion? So just ask yourself that question. Because fundamentally for me, it just comes down to, is she someone I want to know? And the answer
is no idea. Now, let me troll myself a bit. I don't know what you heard about me. That an OnlyFans model can get a dollar out of me. No Cadillacs, no perms you can't see.
For God's sake. We're feeling musical today, aren't we, Stella?
Yeah. So I saw this also here that, you know, I don't know if that's the case, but, you know, it's sad. But he writes here, Jay writes, makes $9 million from whoring herself on OnlyFans, then changes tune and become a right-wing mascot for more cash and fame. Well played. Now, anyway, just fun aside, I think basically if she says the truth, it's good for her. And at the end of the day, if she helps women get out of OnlyFans, again, that's also really good. And that's a positive. And, you know, being a force for good is a good thing. It should go without saying. But I think that it shouldn't be the case that people should be pressured to accept her, or people should be pressured to somehow signal that they have forgiven her and that they just play along with this, because at the moment there aren't good reasons to think that she says that she speaks the truth. And that's my point, that, you know, it's a bit extremely divisive. It's extremely divisive if people go around now and use this as an occasion for saying, well, no, you're not a good person because you believe her, or you're not a good person because you disbelieve her, and vice versa. I just think that's, you know, wrong. And when we're talking about things like that, you know, they take time. I'm really uncomfortable with the whole publicity thing. I'm also uncomfortable when people talk about, you know, their faith in public and they're trying to marketize it or try to rebrand it. Personally, I think it's a very personal thing. It isn't something to be marketed that, you know, just it because it's supposed to not be about material purposes. Anyway, just, you know, who am I to say this? Things like that. So that's my point, that, you know, it's a bit silly if there's a whole big debate about this and, you know, people are lashing to each other because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, she just said that she walks the path of virtue, but is she really? Why shouldn't we just wait and see?
Time will tell.
Let's go to the video comments.
Well, this is something I don't usually get to see in my own backyard. A kookaburra. They look nice, but they're god-awful annoying in the morning.
All right.
It's a really wholesome video.
He's a sweet little fella.
Haven't seen one of them before.
I like him. Give him a pat.
The next one.
Yeah, a lot of Dawkins' most recent carry-ons I had reviewed almost a year ago in this video. Basically, he's discovered the god-shaped hole. I think he realizes that he stuffed up big time, but I think he's just too chicken shit to admit it. By the way, Carl, I watched your video on this topic. Go to church, man, please.
CSCooper.com.au. Smart. They're learning. Let's go to the next one.
So San Francisco ended up going back on its ban on doing business with 30 states, which were, as it saw, anti-LGBTQAIP2S+, and basically it ended up being just a big flop, just like the ban of Russia in Europe. It just ends up backfiring on you instead. So that's where we're at. And hey, these people are financially illiterate. We have to give them a break. They were considering giving $5 million to each black person after all.
I don't know what to say to that. Kind of funny. The next one.
Mr. Otter just came home with these. I'm a farmer's daughter. He should know better. If you're a proud Englishman, for starters, don't buy French apples. And definitely don't buy Red Delicious, Golden Delicious, or Granny Smith. Granny Smiths are the worst. They can be kept for a year. They're basically just nitrogen. These three varieties killed true British apples. If you want apple content, let me know.
I'm now a British apple nationalist. Save me squirrels. Save me apples.
All right. I don't...
Just don't like them.
I just drink. So... To the next one.
Callum doesn't eat food.
We look, we're looking at the eclipse for people listening.
Oh, nice.
Lady in Texas has experienced it, and it's gone a bit dark. But imagine if I ran a radio station, it'd be awful.
That was really quick.
Now light.
Yeah. It's a nice landscape. I love these landscapes. They remind me of some Greek landscapes as well.
Texas, the Greece of West. All right.
There is probably a part of America where like lots of Greek immigrants settled in because you often, you know, particular parts of America, particular populations from towns and countries went to. Where is that?
I think it's Northeast.
Oh, what?
Where a lot of...
Around like the New England area.
But I think what I said about the climate has to do with the position in the equator.
All right. I hear a lot of the Greek restaurants out in America are shite because they just don't get it. Like there's Greeks who have gone over there and then they've just not been able to recreate it.
I don't know. I can't tell. The only thing I can say is that a good rule of thumb is if you see the people eating there. So for instance, if it's a Greek place, if you see Greeks eating there, it's a good sign. If it's an Italian place, if you see Italians eating there, it's a good sign.
It's harder to spot than Asians, isn't it? You know, you want to go good Chinese, so you look for Chinese people. You're looking for Italians, you're just looking for people doing this all the time. Right?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So let's go to the written comments. So Titmus Titties says, finally got to catch the podcast live. It's only because my wife is in for a pretty major surgery just now. If any of you in the comments are praying type, I'd appreciate it. I know all the hosts are godless heathens, so no help there.
I hope your wife's surgery goes well.
Hector Rex says, so Callum, how does it feel to have the devil and the angel on your shoulders during the podcast?
We're kind of dressed like that, aren't we?
Harry, you're devilish. No.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Alrighty. William Snidker says, Callum is right about seeking out content. If it's good, people will seek it out. There's a reason I'm watching the stream on the website and not just the segments on YouTube. It's quality stuff I'm interested in.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you've got a larger platform as NPR, if you're producing short, they're not going to stay. And if you're making good stuff, they would have, and they didn't.
Like Vice, who died as well. Mm.
Animosity says, NPR got a giant endowment from the widow of Ray Kroc, Joan, the man who founded McDonald's, which is why they can operate without much government cash. NPR listeners are the same as when they were founded in the 60s. Hippie boomers, their audience has never increased and has decreased as the listeners die off.
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, from the inside, it seems that they did try to do something with that. What they did in their head was, we're going to reach the Hispanics and blacks because it's a large growing audience. And
they're known for listening to white radio.
Yeah, instead they got really progressive freaks. Right. Tech Heresy says, the thing that gets me about the legacy media's reaction to Trump was that he wasn't that extreme. Most everything he did was from a center perspective, but with a thumb in the eye of the left. Their freakout was likely because their bubble of eternal leftward push of history was popped and they lost their minds and all ability to hide their actual intent to destroy the country.
I think that's part of it. I also think part of it is the fact that Donald Trump, in the debates especially, was not shy about just saying, everybody's corrupt. Here's how they're corrupt. I have literally paid these people in the past to do corrupt things for me, and they continue to do it. And I think that at that point, the security service immediately decided, right, we need to get our chickens in a line, or whatever the phrase is. We need to get everybody on board and let everybody know that Trump is the devil, because otherwise he might actually try and do something about the security services like he says he is doing. But then he comes in and they'd already butted him up, so he didn't really do much about it.
I think there's a lot of truth in what the commenter said, though, because especially after Brexit, then Trump. I mean, whenever people would talk about this period, that's the two things they put together. Because it was a real threat that, oh man, the EU might disintegrate because it's shit. And oh man, this leftward push that we're doing, that might actually get pushed back. Like, there was a real fear. Sadly, it is not terminated as the way it should have. But who knows? Maybe the future's good. Let's go to the next section.
Oh, sorry. I just wanted to read one from Pericles, who said, it's not gay, it's Mediterranean is going to be my new phrase whenever I'm accused of doing something a bit fruity.
I'm Italian. I can rape women and men.
Stop, they said. It's He's not white. I mean, he's Italian.
It's a nice jacket. Come on.
It's fine, yeah.
Yeah. It's trippy.
Very Mediterranean.
Yeah. It's a little bit Italian. The Crusader. Peterborough in the news again, huh? I've lived not too far from that cesspool and still support it being nuked for the good of the country. That is the words of the Crusader only, not mine. Which would depress me, as Peterborough is one of the oldest places in the country and didn't deserve what's happened to it. No, none of this country, no part of this country has deserved what has been foisted on it by our rulers. But that's what we've got anyway, because for some reason, post-World War II, our leaders have just increasingly become worse and worse and worse and more traitorous to this country. I wonder why. Caroline List. Apparently, Bolton Clownsill, see what you did there, loaned over £150 million to other councils, including Birmingham, Manchester, and Liverpool. Strangely, they have money to lend to other towns. So Birmingham, Manchester, and Liverpool are being kept up by Bolton.
Imagine investing in Birmingham. I'll get that back.
Yeah, this is we've got some exciting capital prospects in Birmingham. Yeah. Strange that they have money to lend to other towns, but not to spend on our town. But don't worry, if the councils can't pay it back, the government will, so our tax money is used as loans. Then when the councils go bankrupt, our other tax money will be used to pay it back. Awesomeness, which is why your council tax is going up. Beautiful. And now I've just got an idea that, like, in my mind, the web, the spider's web or the blob or whatever, you know, there's all of the different tendrils, the different people pulling the strings behind it all in the north, in the northwest of the country. Bolton pulling the strings of Manchester and Liverpool, making them dance.
King of the north.
Yeah, king in the north. Annie Moss says, why is it towns don't do gentrification like they do in the US and fix up towns? Because whenever they try, they run out of money almost immediately.
You'd also need some English people, just saying.
Yeah, well, that,
how else are you going to fix central Birmingham? You're not.
That would help as well. But literally, so in the case of Crewe, for instance, once again, they spent a lot of money investing into the town centre for future plans for regeneration. because of the HS2 line that was going to be coming through. They wanted to have new leisure center. They wanted a bowling alley and cinema, Cineplex in the center of the town. They knocked down loads of arcade units where people were running independent businesses. They knocked down the bus station. They started to build, well, the multi-story car park in the town center is almost complete, should be done by the end of next month, as should the new bus station. So they spent millions on that. Halfway through the year last year, they said that, HS2 gets cancelled, or the northern leg of it does, and then the council says, well, we've run out of all of our money, and there's no point in capital investment anymore, and they said that they weren't going to, all of the arcade space that they knocked down to use for other things isn't going to get used for everything that they wanted. Instead, it's going to meanwhile uses, and some of the only independent-run shops in the town centre that were still working there have now shut down as a result, because they say they have no confidence operating in the town centre, because there's just not going to be enough footfall. There's no reason for people to visit. And so, yeah, a lot of it is just complete mismanagement of our country, coming all the way from the top with the government to the bottom of the local government as well, because the local government sees these signals, they make plans, the government changes those plans because they're incompetent as well. Everything is fucked.
Right. Let's go to the comments. We've had a donation by Josie Angels. Thank you very much. Who writes, Nala is naturally a well-spoken gal. Only time will tell if she's honest. She drew anime fans with her marketing. The win is that this conversation is happening. Someone online, thoughts can be redeemed, but they have to actually take responsibility and change to do so. And it's still inadvisable to marry one. Andrew Narog, Christianity is about redemption. Proclaiming that the soul of this OnlyFans girl doesn't matter is antithetical to the faith. The sincerity of her conversion is between her and God, especially if she's not trying to monetize it. Besides, the message she's now proclaiming is beneficial to her side, no? So, I didn't say that her soul does not matter. I don't think anyone here said this. The question isn't this. The question is whether we have good reason to think that she is honest. And regarding the message, I would say it depends on the effect that it has.
Honestly, again, for me...
Because if it doesn't have a good effect, it won't be believed. That's what I'm saying.
Again, for me, the question is why she hasn't chosen to take herself out of the spotlight and go on to live... She's met this nice guy. Why is she continuing on the social media thing? Because the point of this is the only reason people have access to all of this in the first place. Social media. I know people who've stopped doing it.
Yeah.
It's not like I immediately invite them onto the podcast to tell their story. I say, no, you go live a normal life. That's what's best for these people.
Grant Gibson, I don't think there is any Christians on the panel today, but it's such an easy answer. Judge not lest you be judged is not an admonition to not have any opinions about anyone's behavior. It's not to weigh in on the salvation of someone else's soul. Welcome her into the church and the Lord will judge her in time. I want to say that's not necessarily true. So the first one, the fact that I just said that Dawkins shouldn't be stoned to death doesn't mean necessarily I'm an atheist. I'm trying to figure things out. I have said so from the very beginning, I'm not a materialist. It doesn't make materialism makes no sense to me, but you know, I'm trying to figure things out. I'm fine with saying I don't know.
I want to become a member of the Inquisition just to take that position publicly.
Yeah. Why?
Unless you want to stone Dawkins to death. You're not a real Christian.
Okay. Suits the red coat. Christ can redeem only fan girls if they're sincere. I personally don't think she is sincere. I think Suits the Red Coat says exactly what I think. The most she could be platformed for is to say, this has ruined my life, and then to not listen to anything else she says. Connor would have been an excellent co-host for this segment, and an actual Christian point of view would be great.
Is he talking about this on his show later, Tomlinson Talks?
I don't know.
Oh, fair play. He might be covering it on the show after this.
Yeah. JJHW, Nala is a narcissistic psychopath. Rue the day, she doesn't have feelings, which is a soul issue. For a person with a profoundly damaged soul to reform, she needs all the help she can get. And she needs to change her entire human network. Drop everyone, move away, start a new life, away from the internet at all. She doesn't strike me as genuinely repenting. And I think that this is a true statement. I agree with you, Ru. And last comment by Robert Longshow. Thank you, Stelios, for that uplifting segment. I must say, based on the nature of my segment, I don't know if you're trolling me or not.
Well, also, there's an important question here, and I think being the youngest, Callum can answer it, which is from Nick Taylor, who says, can someone explain to me why Zoomers get hard on over elf ears and cross eyes with a tongue out? Seems cringe. Callum, the floor is yours.
Uber. We're out of time. Goodbye.